The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Welcome, everyone, to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
Terry, what you got for us today?
Yeah, I got something here going on. Let's talk about how about you guys first.
Okay.
Do you guys go to the gym? Do you guys exercise? Do you pump iron? Go to the Iron Paradise?
The Iron Paradise. Never heard that one before. Okay, first of all, yes, I do work out.
We can tell.
Thank you. Our kids are in track and soccer, and so when we take them, we'll often go for a jog and then go and watch them practice or whatever. But the other thing my wife and I do is we do Insanity together. Ooh. Which is hilarious if you've ever done Insanity.
PX90, I think I've done once.
Okay, twice. You've done, yeah, that once. Yeah. So we do Insanity, and then I have some free weights that I like to pump.
Nice.
What about you, Mr. Kim? Besides Ninja,
I don't do much workout at all, as you can probably tell from my frame.
We can tell. No.
Once in a blue moon, I might do some like push-ups and crunches and all that stuff, but
Steve,
not very regularly at all.
He lifts books.
In the UK.
Wait a minute. What about you, Terry?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We're not letting you off the hook that easy.
I do try to get to the gym as often as I can. And that usually happens in the mornings before I get to work.
Even when we've traveled with you, you've gotten up early and hit the gym.
Yep. Yeah. I try to make
it impressive.
I try to make it a staple in my life. If you go to the gym, you think you go and work out, right?
Yes.
Get sweaty, right?
Yes.
Well, in the UK, there's a club that is introducing a new class called Nappersize.
I'm afraid to ask what that is.
60 minutes of napping.
So you go to the gym.
You pay money for this. You go to the gym, and they lead you through some relaxation exercises, and then you fall asleep.
You know what? I could never fall asleep with a room full of people. That reminds me of preschool.
Not at all. That gives me anxiety.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Yeah.
The kind of things that people will pay to do are truly amazing. Do you see that recently where there are professional cuddlers?
Yes.
You can pay to be cuddled. Terry's like, yeah, I've looked into that.
No. Wow. But it says this class is designed to reinvigorate the mind, improve moods, and even burn an odd calorie.
Yeah, it's called sleeping. Go home and try it.
Like if I want a nap, I just go home and I sleep and, you know, I don't need to go to the gym to do that.
I want to meet one of these people who pays money to go take a nap.
I mean, you look at this video and it's just like so serene. You know, people are just like having a sleepy time.
Hey, you know, yes. Throwing this out there, a buddy of mine said he bought a device that changed his life.
Whenever somebody starts off like that, I'm a little concerned.
And the device is alarm clock that, you know, if you're taking a nap or you're waking up in the morning, that gently brings you back by slowly turning on the light. Especially when it stays dark, you know, especially in the north for extended time.
Forever.
So it actually gives you that sense, you know, that it's daytime.
Interesting.
Because do you guys find that in the summer you start waking up earlier, right? Because the sun's coming out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
So anyway, go check it
out. Or your kids wake you up because they're up by 6. All right, let's jump right into things then. Earth Day, April 22nd, 2017. You probably saw this covered all over the place in the news world. March for Science took place. It was a series of rallies that happened around the globe, really, throughout many cities. Like
600 cities, I think I saw.
Yeah, something like that. So this was a pretty big deal, kind of like March for Women, March for Life. But what was interesting about this whole thing was just how this thing was framed. And who the figurehead was. Now, the figurehead, if you grew up in the 90s, like we all did.
Yeah. Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Exactly.
Buddy, I watched him religiously on PBS.
I have never seen him.
What?
Really?
You've never seen?
Never seen him.
Bill Nye the Science Guy?
No.
Wow.
Do you remember the episode where he turned his car into lawn? He grew lawn all over his car. and drove it down the
street. No, I don't remember that one.
That was a great episode.
Mind you, I was still pretty new in Canada at that point, and so I didn't speak much English at all. So I just kind of watched
Steve learned English by watching Bill Nye the Science Guy.
So it said it went
and
on.
And lots of Animaniacs.
But it went on for like 5 years, right, this show?
Yeah.
And then it ended in 98, time. I think they said.
Yeah, which is probably for the best.
And so the interesting thing is he was sort of the, like I said, the figurehead for March for Science.
Which is very odd in many ways.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard some people say, well, you know, Bill Nye, he's not a real scientist because he only has a bachelor's in mechanical engineering, which is a pretty broad kind of a degree, right? Mechanical mm-hmm. engineering. With that said, he's actually done some pretty cool things. Like he, after his TV show, he moved on to work with Boeing. And then he was also on the design team for Mars Dial.
With NASA.
And so he's got some cred.
Well, and clearly people loved him from the articles I read. Those people that saw him there were big fans.
He's like a rock star in the science world right now, it seems.
Well, mm-hmm. he's gotten his face out there a lot lately.
Right.
And I think he's done that by coming out. You know, yeah, I haven't seen him for years, you know, after that show. You know, he dropped off the radar, but now all of a sudden he's come back on. And he's really gained an audience, it seems to me, by being controversial.
What do you mean? Like controversial in what sense?
From what I've been reading, it seems like he's always been outspoken, but now he's, you know, airing his outspokenness more in through TV, through media. So, for example, many people know that he did a debate with Ken Ham not that long ago.
Right.
That seems to me that before that debate happened, that's really when he came back in the public sphere, is arguing against creation science and particularly with regards to global warming and stuff like that. It really just came out outspoken about it, and that led to that debate with Ken Ham. And then since then, he's just kind of been in the public spotlight a lot lately.
And I think that rock star status also
with a bow tie.
Yeah, with the bow tie. That's been his sort of signature.
It's smart though, right? He knows his MO.
Yeah. Totally.
He wears it and he knows people adore him for that, and that's the thing that really identifies him. And he has this rock star status because, you know, like you would think that everybody that was at the March for Science rally, they probably grew up on Bill Nye the Science Guy. And so he's got that rock star status too. So in a sense,
people
are
yelling out at him, "I love you." And then they're chanting, "Bill, Bill, Bill." You know, like this guy is serious stuff right now.
Well, yeah. it's a little weird to me.
It's a little weird in that for me, what was weird was not so much Bill being the spokesperson. I mean, that was a bit weird too. I mean, I thought, well, why don't you bring in somebody like Stephen Hawking, the real Stephen Hawking, not the fake one we brought in last
time? Well, I mean, there's a lot of people right now that you can bring in that are on the cutting edge of science, right? That can rally the troops. But I get the sense, though, that when you use a personality, a TV personality, I mean, they're well-spoken. They know how to be in the public because we all know there are some uber science nerds and they wouldn't know what—
communicators.
Yeah, terrible communicators. So, I mean, in that sense— It makes sense to me to use a public figure like that. Mm-hmm. The part, though, that's odd about the whole thing is what is it a march for is the thing that was going through my mind. And especially when you see how outspoken Bill is now and in the new TV show that he has on Netflix.
Bill Nye Saves the World.
I watched two episodes. And I just want to say, guys, I've done a lot for this show. I have over the years. I've read a lot of articles that have been painful. I've talked on issues that pain my soul. But watching two episodes of Bill Nye Saves the World was probably the most I've done for this show. And my soul is still recovering from what I saw.
Oh, man.
Did you guys watch any of that? Horrendous.
I have not seen anything of this guy.
Some of the commentaries that I heard is that show is very political.
Oh, beyond political.
Yeah.
First of all, basically what the show is it's a tutorial in secularism, first of all. And more than that, it's Bill's soapbox. And in fact, in the show, about midway through, he has a segment, "Give Me a Minute," something like that. Mm-hmm. And basically where he just takes a minute to look at the camera and rants about whatever it is that they're talking about, whether it's global warming or sexual identity. And he tackles every controversial subject that you could imagine and then rants about it.
And I think a lot of that was also kind of reflected in March for Science, at least coming out of the United States. It seemed like a lot of the issues that they were talking about wasn't really science, but it was political.
Oh, yeah. And did you guys watch, by the way, the video? It's working its way through the social media right now. It's a video of a dance with
Rachel Bloom.
Rachel Bloom. Yeah. She was an actor in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. It will hurt your soul to watch that video in more ways than one. We'll have to post that on the show notes. And it gives you a taste of what this show's like. It's unbelievable. It's difficult to believe.
Here are the lyrics. If you have children in the vicinity, you might want to, you know, cover their ears for this part. My vagina has its own voice, not vocal cords, a metaphorical voice. Sometimes I do a voice for my vagina because my sex junk is so much more than either or. Power bottom or power top, versatile love may have some butt stuff. Its evolution ain't nothing new. There's nothing taboo about a sex stew. If they're alive, I'll date them. Channing or Jenna Tatum. I'm down for anything. Don't box in my box.
Now, you need to imagine that being rapped to
it's a rap.
DJ Seahorse bumping the beat. I wish I was making that up. To some of the worst singing and dancing I think I've ever seen. By the way, Bill Nye introduces this segment by saying, this is something real special. And it was real special.
It was really special.
So how does he relate this into science?
Two thoughts went through my mind, kind of connected. One was, okay, how do you... Because the whole premise of transgender advocacy is that your body is one way, but you feel like you're out of sync with your own body, now, right?
Yeah, to explain that, by the way, in the show, he talks about that and he explains. Now, I mean, in this sense, you know, sure, the show is helpful in that it's going to tell you exactly how your secular culture thinks. There's four quadrants that he talks about there. And he says, first of all, you have sex. And he says, well, that just gets divided. You got male and female, sure. But they make then a distinction between sex and gender.
Gender, right.
To which... In gender, then he's going to say, listen, there is a spectrum, and this is a word that he uses repeatedly. Mm-hmm. It's a spectrum. And he attempts to give scientific reasons for there being a spectrum, and then he moves on to the third quadrant, which is attraction, again, spectrum, and then fourth is expression.
The thought that goes through my mind is, how would you verify that scientifically?
Well, this is what he does, and I think this is so important to understand about what our culture is doing right now with science. Is first, the thing that's happening is science is being used as like a billy club, right? He says this actually in the show a number of times. You know, he'll say, people, you have to believe this. You have to accept this, or, you know, these imperatives. Why? Because it's science, he says.
Right.
Listen, it's science. So this is the way it is. Now, he'll start by maybe talking about something that in fact is quite scientific. Like, for example, when he talks about global warming, he talks about how water, when heated, expands. So yeah, you know, we understand that and we can test that. But then he'll quite quickly move from science, and you need to understand science is a method of studying the world. And he quickly moves from that to his conclusions. And these are his beliefs about the world. And these then are not scientific. In fact, there's with the regards to the sexuality one that was very interesting. He has a male and a female brain, and he picks them both up and he says, now, you know, it's been suspected that there's this difference between a male and a female brain. And he says, but you can't see that difference by looking at it. The differences just come out. I mean, this is the problem with something like gender, right? He's ultimately saying this isn't something that you can test. This is just something that you experience. This is something that you are. And so it's funny to me how quickly he's moved from physics to metaphysics.
The second thing that I was thinking about kind of connects with that is what do we mean by science, right? Because not all science is as very black and white like you would like it to be.
Mm-hmm. And there's different types of science.
Right. Typically, you know, when you put the different fields of science in a hierarchy from more precise to less precise, you would start with physics. I mean, you can start with mathematics, right? And people don't typically consider that at least in academia, it's considered a field of arts, not science. But let's just start with that. Mathematics, and then you have physics. So physics is not as precise as mathematics. And then you have chemistry, and then you have biology. Mm-hmm. And then typically that's where we draw the line in terms of the hard sciences. It's the holy trinity of science, right? Hard science.
Yeah, although a lot of people wouldn't put biology in there. They would just say that it collapses into physics.
Right. I mean, you could say the same thing about chemistry.
Yeah, I think you can, although I'll often hear people put those together, physics and chemistry.
Right.
But again, a lot of people just say the hard science is physics.
Right. But then when you move on from there, like, what else are you going to include? Are you going to include psychology?
Now, in the university, psychology is a BA. It's not a BS. And many people think, no, you know, that's just modern day witchcraft or whatever, right? You need to get to the hard sciences, that you need to view psychology through the lens of physics.
That was part of my, not a concern, but just the thought that went through my mind. Like, how wide is this word for science when they talk about it?
Well, I think, though, wouldn't you agree that the way we're seeing it used, and even in this march for science, science has become... There's a distinction between science and scientism, mm-hmm. right? And ultimately, these two are getting blurred, and people are seeing these two things as the same thing. And because in many ways, science has become its own religion.
And that's exactly the point that I was thinking of. I'm glad you brought that up, because as I was watching just the kind of, I guess, the imperatives that are coming out.
Command. These are commands.
Yeah, commands. You have to believe this. It just seemed very familiar to me, because how did people try to justify power? In the past, often religion was used, right? So how does that work? Well, religion was often used and dissent was discouraged, because this revelation is a settled matter. No dissent allowed. And if a dissent is ever brought up, now that is seen as immoral. And that's exactly what is happening, I think, with this March for Science and all of these commands that are coming out. See, science is settled on the issue of, say, climate change.
And all you have to do, by the way, to prove that mm-hmm. is just say it. Mm-hmm. Right? We've talked about this before, and I think this is significant. There has been, and Bill talks about this in his show, that there has been a trend for people to not put as much emphasis or weight on science as they used to. Science was championed much more in the past than it is right now. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about this in a number of podcasts ago, where I said, listen, I think we're moving more into a culture of law than a culture of science. Yeah. You know, and we went from theology, science. I think we're moving into law. But what Bill's doing, which I think is quite interesting, is he's now just taking science and just using it as a trump card to put forward this command, this law, right? That this needs to be the law because science says so, and all I need to do to show that is simply say it.
With this whole March for Science, I think it's perpetuating the myth that this science is against religion.
It's often assumed, yeah.
In the show, he goes out of his way to continually, like, he won't say religion in the show. What he'll say is he'll label anyone who doesn't agree with him as these naysayers, these knuckle draggers, these fools.
Yeah.
And this is the part, by the way, I think that listeners really need to understand, and particularly parents. This is one of the challenges that we're facing right now, is shows like Bill Nye Saves the World that children watch and that don't have the intellectual capability to understand fact from fiction and an opinion from fact. And they don't see how crafty this is. And so what happens is they start to label, hey, look, anyone who doesn't agree with this is against science. You know, these are foolish people. Now, he's not going to say who they are. You can do that work for yourself. Oh, I go to church and they say this or that. Oh, you know, my church must be against science.
So I look at that and I go, how does that encourage critical thinking? Because if you want to encourage critical thinking, then you would have to say, okay, this is the point of view that's presented by those who believe in climate change. And here is what the naysayers say, and you compare them. And that I understand. But if you are just going to name call people, right, and say, well, they're knuckle draggers, and this is not
He doesn't say He'll call them naysayers. He's very careful how he does it.
Okay. So he doesn't say knuckle draggers?
No. No, but he's making that he's painting that kind of a picture.
Right.
That look, I mean, how foolish would you have to be not to see this or to believe this?
Right. And that's the sort of thing, right? Now, you're not really engaging with that. Of course, you know, they're in a show like that, you don't necessarily have the time to break it all down. But just so our parents understand that this is the sort of thing that our kids are going to watch, these kinds of shows are not necessarily designed to give you both sides of the argument and say, you know, this is why we believe in climate change, you know, and that sort of thing. And so you got to be careful, I guess, you know, what it is that our children are watching.
I mean, the dichotomy between those religion and science is very recent development, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like before the Enlightenment, Christians really had a huge part in the whole scientific endeavor, right? And the whole scientific measure.
In fact, I was just reading a book. It just came out in 2017 called The Restless Clock. It's by a professor at Stanford and named Jessica. I should probably look into that. She goes farther than that to just say that it came from it. She argues that science and theology are the same thing. They're just two sides of the same coin.
And she's not a Christian.
I don't think so. In the book, she didn't come across one way or the other. So I really can't say, you know, what she thinks. But I just found that interesting because ultimately she was saying, look, theology is seeking to know God through revelation. Science is seeking to know God through his works. One through his words, the other through his works, through creation. And that's how Christians went about science. And in doing so, they developed methods. Think about this for a moment. They developed methods, hermeneutical methods, to study systematically the Bible. And they came across with methods to scientifically study the natural world. This is ultimately how the scientific method would be developed. So that's the challenge. That's the annoying part, right? Is that everyone has a claim on this, on science, and theology doesn't, you know, religions don't all of a sudden get excluded from doing science. And then all of a sudden, if we disagree with one another, we're no longer scientific. We're no longer embracing science, but everyone else is.
I mean, what the Christian worldview of this earth is that it's natural. It was created by God. So we want to discover that.
Right.
Christian. Yeah, as a Christian, we want to invite that, and because he created everything that we know here, right?
It means, though, that when you're doing science, and this is where I think Bill is very sneaky, and people need to watch out for, is he'll start with the science, right? He'll start very scientific, even in the show. For example, he'll discuss what greenhouse gases are, but then he'll quickly make a move where he'll say, look, this is what greenhouse gases are. Climate change is real. I don't have a race in this pony, by the way, with regards to climate change. I don't really care one way or the other on that. But that doesn't follow, right? To explain what something is doesn't mean that that is what's taking place. And that's the transition that you see taking place. So start with science, and then quite quickly he moves into opinion, particularly Bill Nye's opinion, and then he'll argue that if you disagree with that, you're disagreeing with science.
And then he moves on from there, and he starts talking about, well, at least he hints at certain political changes that need to be made. And I think in his show, now correct me if I'm wrong here, in his show, he's being interviewed by, what's his name, Reader, I think it was the last name.
episode? There's 13 episodes.
Yeah, I'm not sure which episode it was from, but there is the part where they're talking about global warming, climate change, and things like that. And they start talking about, you know, like, what should we do basically with people who are having extra kids? You may have seen that.
Yeah.
Right? And then Bill Nye hints at, well,
he flirts with eugenics.
Basically. And we'll put that up on the show notes.
Even actually himself. This is why he argues that he didn't have children, is because there's a neurological disorder in his family.
Right. And that's fine. That's what he chooses to do.
Right.
But the kinds of ideas that he was flirting with, it involved the coercive power of the state.
See, this is an important point, isn't it, though, Steve? There is a difference between saying, here's what I think, even with regards to sexuality, right? Here's what I think about transgender, all these different types of gender that are out there. That's one thing. I don't have a problem with you having your own opinion about those things. Mm-hmm. But what he's doing is not telling you his opinion. He's telling you why this should be your opinion, right?
Why it should be a law.
And then more than that, why this should be law, why this is going to save the world, because we all need to embrace this truth, his truth.
I mean, for one, I don't even know what the guy meant by extra kids. But you're absolutely right. I think March for Science, it is not only about science, but it's also about politics. And I think people really need to – I mean, there's nothing wrong with that per se, because, I mean, if you look at March for Women, March for Life, these are all political. Yes, it's about women's issues. Yes, it's about life issues. But ultimately, we want to see political changes happen.
Because it makes you wonder, can a Christian walk in the March for Science? Like, would you feel welcome as a Christian in there? I mean, because you think about what is a spokesperson that they are putting – now we're getting back to where we started, right, with Bill Nye. Who's the spokesperson that they're putting, and what is the message that he's proclaiming? Because ultimately that's speaking for this march, if you will.
Right. I guess I just want our listener to understand that March for Science wasn't about purely about science. It was science plus politics.
And really, it's a specific type of view of science that needs to be held.
Right. And I thought March for Science kind of missed the mark, in the sense that if I were putting on a rally like March for Science, what I would like to see discussed a lot more are things that we talked about before, how objectivity in academia and in science is getting marred because of the need
How many bogus science is being published right now?
Right, and because how money moves from institution to institution, right? Because you need to get your grants, and so – and how objectivity is marred by that, and also because of the need for publishing all the time, publishing something sensational. Science may be neutral, but scientists are not, and it is scientists that are doing the science.
That's right. Yeah, this is an interesting challenge, by the way, that I don't think has an easy answer. In the past, when you see communists on the rise, there was a desire in communism that many people were speaking out against, and that was to create these community of scientists that would do what they pleased. You know, the state would just dictate, you'll study what we tell you to study. And scientists, you know, we're speaking out against that, because obviously science doesn't work like that. It is a human endeavor in which you are studying fields of interest to you, and you are seeking insight and discovery, that you just can't systematize that. Now, what's interesting about that is we are in a free economy, right? And I think in many ways we thought, oh, you know, science will flourish under a free economy. But what we found is that's not necessarily the case, because now what do we have? We've got big corporations with their own agenda, and they're swinging the power of their dollar in the direction of the kind of research and results that they want. And this is raising its own challenges with regards to science again. And now we're back to agenda, right? And this is where then you can use science to do whatever you want it to do. And this is the challenge that we've been facing in a free market, is how corporations – such as the cigarette corporation for years could use science for its own bidding, right? They just invest into the research that's coming up with the results that they want.
So this march, I mean, is promoting a truth of science.
We should march for science.
Yeah, I think we should too. But this is very much saying this is above everything else, that science can hold the truth as we move forward, you know, as a society, and that we should be looking to science fully, and religion does not have a part at all. And now it's become
really
a political, like you
doesn't
said.
Doesn't have a part at all. You can no longer even have an opinion any longer.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's a misconception. There's a lot of, at a lay level, this is very popular, this Bill Nye, and he's become a rock star. As far as I, you know, reading about him and learning about him, he is like so popular on a very lay level.
Well, once they watch his show, they won't be popular anymore.
But I mean, once you get into the academics, there's lots of magazines out there. Journals that address science and religion these days. I mean, the Templeton Foundation is geared towards bringing science and religion together, and they give $1 million reward for that.
A lot of the scientists that are doing science, they understand that this isn't some cut and dry thing. And in fact, the reality is that there's a lot of very religious scientists that are out there. Again, this is way more political than it is scientific.
Okay, then let's wrap up that topic there, and let's move into this segment, this new segment that we started last week, where we look at some of the questions that came in, and we're going to take one or two and just address that. And we're just going to, again, just shoot from our hips here. So this is what we're thinking at the moment on this question. And the question this week is actually addressed to you, Andy. What is the difference between a human and a person?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. And a lot of us that are writing on this subject will make a distinction. And I'm very careful in my writing when I'll say human, people, person, because I do mean something different by those. In particular, I can make this distinction helpful in saying that I will refer to God as a person. Now, I can also refer to you, Steve, as a person. But I mean by that something very different than when I refer to Steve as a human. I would not refer to God as a human. And so the distinction that I'm making is when I talk of person or personhood, I am speaking specifically of a non-physical reality or the non-physical aspect of a person. Now, you could call that their essence or soul, mind. This is what I mean when I'm using the word person. Whereas when I'm using the word human, I am now combining these things. Now, this is interesting, by the way, because this is where Descartes came up with a term that was hugely influential in the Enlightenment. Well, he didn't come up with a term. He came up with an idea that we call dualism. And what Descartes did is to study human beings, he separated them. He separated the soul from the body so that he could study the body without having to worry about the soul. And then you could study the soul without having to worry about the body. And then he also then would combine the two so that you could study those two together. So when I refer to a human being, I'm referring to both body and soul. Or I could just be referring to the body.
Okay. Let me throw you a little curveball here. Sometimes when I talk on the topic of abortion and things like that, that comes up, right? There's human. Is this a person or not? You know, is the preborn a person or not? That sort of thing. And often the response to that has been, well, this talk of personhood has been so abused in history to discriminate against people. And so what I'll tell them is,
Talking about dehumanization?
Right. And okay. So I would much rather use them synonymously, the words human and person synonymously, because for so long, like so often in history, we use the concept of personhood to say, okay, black people are not persons in mm-hmm. the legal sense, for example, or women are not right. legal persons and they have no voting rights, that sort of thing. So do you have any concerns that this kind of distinction that you're making between a human and a person could, you know, lead to something like that? Or what do you think of that?
Yeah, of course. I'm always worried about that people will remove personhood from a human being and they will dehumanize them. At the other extreme, though, I'm also worried theologically that people will misunderstand when I'm talking about God, right? And I'm referring to God as a person. So in our language, we've got to be careful that we're not miscommunicating when we're talking about what a human is and when I'm talking about what God is. Also, it's going to be imperative when we're using person to be more specific in the culture that we live in today. Now, Aristotle would have seen personhood, and this was an idea that even Descartes and many others, even to today, would hold, and that is when they say personhood, they mean rationality in many ways.
A certain trait of a human being.
Yeah. And that's what we're talking about. Now, this is going to raise problems, though, because now we're coming into an era of technology in which we will soon be able to create, I'm sure, machines that can mimic personhood. So I think that we're going to have to be careful how we're defining that and what we mean by it, especially if we're just talking about rationality or something like that. Now, if everyone's using the word person and they've all got their own definition of person, this is going to become problematic, especially when we see personhood being given to machines.
These definitions that you use, are they used in all disciplines that address this question or these terms?
I would say that every discipline is using personhood. Now, how are they defining that is going to be different. So, for example, by personhood, people may be referring to the mind. So they'll make a distinction between the brain and the mind. And we would be quite happy with that. Yeah, we'd go, oh yeah, we would make a distinction between the brain and the mind as well. Now I'm talking body and soul, for example, or body or mind or body or essence. Now, the problem is, though, is what do they then mean by mind? Well, they mean by mind, say a secular scientist, for example, they mean an emergent property. Well, what do they mean by an emergent property? Do you see what I mean? Well, we have to keep asking these questions that ultimately comes to the place where they'd say, well, it's just an aspect of the brain, actually. So the mind is just simply the brain. It's something that the brain is doing. And ultimately, this has to lead for them back to something physical, because that's the problem of having something non-physical. This is where, by the way, why I keep pushing back on our culture and how inconsistent they are, right? In that either there is physical and non-physical or not, but you can't have it both ways. And they want to have it both ways because without it, it leads to absurd conclusions, such as if a brain is all that there is and there is no mind, then you in fact don't exist. And everything that you're experiencing is just an illusion that the brain is making.
All right. I think we can wrap up there. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about.